The battle went on for some time. When the occupants of the house saw their chance, they jumped into their cars and drove to Hopkinsville for help. The Kentucky New Era paper, the afternoon of August 22nd, 1955. Welcome to the Oddity Archive with Evan and David.
Ready when you are.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens out there. I hope you're ready for all the smooth jazz your hammer and anvil can take.
Evan, I've been workshopping the radio voice. How was that one?
You know, last week, honestly, I was just being polite. It was a little rough. This week, you crushed it.
Flawless?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Perfect.
Excellent. So how you been?
I've been good. Just up to the usual, working and then trying to relax on the time off, doing podcasts with you.
Trying to relax and with me just texting you constantly, when's the next edit ready?
Sending me strange photos with no context, all that good stuff. But how have you been?
I've been pretty good. Today's story is just a fantastic story. We're going to be talking about the Kelly Hopkinsville Goblins. And so it's a story that I had heard of in the past, but I didn't know a whole lot about. And once I got into it, I'm in love with this story.
Yeah. But before we do, last week I shared a very, very spooky happening, if I do say so myself.
The box.
The box, as it was. So I think it's only fair to ask, have you had anything spooky recently or in your life?
Not recently. I haven't had anything odd or spooky happened to me recently. I do have a few in my past, though.
Okay.
And I don't know why, but one particular story just popped in my head when you asked that question.
Yeah, what you got?
So this was, I was probably 13, 14 years old, and I was on the computer at my parents' house, probably playing some video game. I don't know. Around that time, it was probably Diablo 2.
I was going to say, we both know what game it was.
Yeah, it was Diablo 2.
It was Diablo 2.
And so I'm playing that. And if you remember the way my parents' house is set up, when you were on the computer, you were facing away from the living room.
Yeah, yeah.
And even if you were facing the living room, there was a wall there, so you couldn't see the TV,
right,
or anything that was going on the TV. Mm-hmm. And this was, well, it had to have been about 7:25 p.m. I know that because it's specifically relating to Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, so great reference point.
I'm playing Diablo 2 on the computer. I can't see anything in the living room, but I can hear the TV. And so Wheel of Fortune's on. They're at the final spin. Mm-hmm. And the person gives their letters, however that works. And then Pat Sajak, you know, is like, okay, you're going to have 15 seconds to guess what's up here. And I don't know why. To this day, I do not understand why this happened. But in that moment, before Pat Sajak gave the person the time to answer, the words garbanzo beans just were in my head.
Yeah.
They just showed up in my head. I remember this. I whispered it to myself. I said, garbanzo beans, like real creepily, while I'm playing Diablo 2. Pat Sajak says, okay, and go, or whatever he says. Person doesn't get it. And then they reveal it, and Pat Sajak is like, ah, garbanzo beans.
So you knew it
before something happened.
Even Pat Sajak knew it. You knew garbanzo beans.
I knew the answer to this was garbanzo beans. That, to this day, that is a weird happening I have no explanation for.
That is spooky. I've had times too where, like, I'll be driving the car and I'm like, I bet the next song's this. And then that song plays. That's happened to me like 5 or 6 times where I swear I've summoned the next track.
Yeah.
I can make Third Eye Blind play by Will.
Do it right now. It just came on someone's Spotify right now.
What is going on with this car? Anyway, I'll save that trick for the drive home.
So do you want to hear more about the Kelly Hopkinsville area of Kentucky?
Yeah, let's get back to the story at hand here. Before we get into it, how had you already heard about this previously?
I actually knew about this story without knowing that it was this story from a very young age. And I didn't realize that until I got into researching this, because it had to have been fourth grade. The whole class had to read a book and then stand in front of the class and tell the class about the book.
Mm-hmm.
And just being who I am, I picked some book that had a bunch of like paranormal and ghost stories and odd things that happened in it.
Yeah.
And so I proceeded to get up in front of the class and tell them about these people in Kentucky battling goblins off of their property, as though it is a true story. And it could be. We'll talk about the possibility of this actually happening or not. But it was received in class as
factual.
This is insane.
Oh, okay.
I think my teacher was doing the trying to get me off the Golden Globe stage. Started the music.
You're getting the hook
like,
off.
Yeah. My teacher's like, I don't know what's going on with this guy, but
he's getting the class all riled up. We gotta
get him gone. And so this is, I've said Kelly Hopkinsville 900 times already. That's where this happens. So these are communities in Christian County, Kentucky. Hopkinsville and Kelly, they're two separate places. For a long time hearing about this, I thought Kelly Hopkinsville was the place.
So it's Kelly / Hopkinsville. Got it. Okay.
And so Hopkinsville is sort of the bigger community. In 1955, they had a population roughly 16,000. I guess the census is every 10 years. So I literally just took the 1950 census and the 1960 census and averaged
in the middle. Yeah.
And so population about 16,000. So not a very large community. And Kelly, Kentucky is a small unincorporated area 9 miles north of Hopkinsville. So where we're talking about is going to be just east of Route 41 in Kelly, Kentucky.
Just for, I guess, for frame of reference, is this near any like bigger cities or anything like that in Kentucky that I would maybe know?
No, this is pretty rural area. Hopkinsville at 16,000, that's the closest real town, city, mm-hmm. anything of note.
I have a family in Paducah, Kentucky, and I'm curious if that's...
You should ask them if they've seen anything odd in the skies.
Hey, Gam Gam, have you seen any goblins around the lake house?
Well, now that you mention it. So this event takes place August 21st and 22nd of 1955 at the Sutton Farmhouse. A couple notes about the farmhouse. It was on a 3-acre lot. It had electricity, but no running water. So they had an outhouse. Okay. They had a well you had to go out to. And I'll just real quick run through the folks that were in the house. There were 11 people in the house.
Okay.
When all of this happened. I'll get into the timeline right after this. It's not super important to remember all of these names.
Okay.
But who was involved.
Yeah.
So there were 8 adults. The first one, Glennie Langford, she was the matriarch of the house. She was the main person owning the house. And then you have Elmer Lucky Sutton. His name is Elmer Sutton, went by Lucky. And then Billy Ray Taylor. And then you had J.C. Sutton, Vera Sutton, Aline Sutton, O.P. Baker, and June Taylor.
It sounds like a whole bunch of like musician names. Like there's a super group waiting to happen there.
Super group.
Yeah. Well, so out of that group, is there anyone I should pay particular note to, or just kind of good to paint the picture of who's involved in the story?
So Glennie Langford, she'll come back up.
Okay.
And then Lucky Sutton and Billy Ray Taylor. Those two will really be the main focus of the story.
Okay.
And Lucky Sutton was married to Vera Sutton. J.C. Sutton was married to Aline Sutton. Billy Ray Taylor was married to June Taylor. So these are a few couples.
Okay.
And there's 3 kids at the house, Lonnie, Charlton, and Mary. And their ages, as best I could find, because it was pretty difficult to find the ages, were 12, 10, and 7.
So it's not one big family living in this house. It sounds like it's sort of various families kind of under one roof.
Yeah, so it was Glennie Langford's farmhouse. And she had folks that were there. And then Lucky Sutton and his wife, Vera Sutton, and then the Taylors, Billy Ray Taylor and June Taylor, they were carnival workers. They were out of work at this time. So they were sort of taking up residence at the house for a couple months while they were trying to find other work. It wasn't a large farmhouse, but they had enough space for everybody to sleep. You probably won't hear about anybody else other than Glennie, Lucky, and Billy Ray.
Okay.
And so, like I said, this takes place August 21st, 22nd, 1955. And the first thing that really sparks this whole story happening is Billy Ray Taylor. He goes out to the well to get some water. About 7 p.m., I looked up the sunset times for Hopkinsville, Kentucky, August 21st to 22nd, 1955. Sunset was 7:32. And then, because at sunset, if you go outside, at the minute it says the sun has set, it's still pretty bright out.
Yeah.
And so
that's when it's just starting to go down on the horizon.
It's just gone below the horizon, but it's still pretty bright out. That night, astronomical twilight, which is when it's dark, was 9:06. So those times are worth remembering. So 7 p.m., he goes out to the well to get some water, and he sees a bright light streak through the sky over his head.
Okay.
He said that when this was happening, he heard a loud hissing sound, and there was sort of a rainbow trail of exhaust behind this bright light streaking across the sky. And he said that it went over his head and past the tree line behind the farm, and then went down into a ravine behind the farmhouse, behind the trees. He said it appeared to land about 300 feet behind the house.
I mean, it was pretty close to his head. It sounds like it kind of whizzed by.
It was up in the air. It was above the trees when it went overhead.
Yeah.
And so where the tree line is, the land sloped down. So where it actually landed, he wouldn't have been able to see, because that would have been below the line of land.
Gotcha. And he said it at a rainbow trail? Leprechaun vibes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
Kinda.
Yeah.
He sees this happen about 7 p.m. and he finishes getting the water. He goes back into the house. He tells the family, I just saw this bright light in the sky streaking across. There's a loud sound. It had rainbow colors coming from behind it.
And Glennie's like, nobody drink that water.
Yeah. And immediately the family is like, you're insane. Yeah. This is ridiculous. Billy Ray was a bit of a jokester. So they all just took it as he's messing with us.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't something anybody should be taking seriously. So nothing really happens until about 8 p.m. So this is after sunset.
Yeah.
Still a little bit of light out there.
Right.
When they notice that all the dogs get riled up, they're barking at something, and then very quickly they all stop barking and run under the porch. So they're noting that. They're saying, okay, that's a bit strange. But again, they're not really worried about anything at this point. So then about 9 p.m. So this is when it's getting really
dark,
right?
Yeah.
Astronomical twilight was 9:06. Somewhere around 9 p.m., one of the people in the house sees a creature at a distance outside of the farmhouse. And they notice that this creature is coming out of the darkness. It's sort of float walking.
Okay.
So it's not walking on two legs.
Yeah.
It's not just floating. It's sort
got
of
a little pizzazz on the
moving its legs. These creatures, you'll see, they got a lot of pizzazz. So it's sort of float walking, and it's moving very slowly, and it has its arms straight up. So sort of in the
like
position
a touchdown.
Of touchdown. Right. Touchdown. I was thinking more like if somebody points a gun at you, you put your hands up.
Yeah, stick them up.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's moving really slowly with its arms up towards the house. Keeps getting closer. Gets to about 20 feet.
Okay.
And the description that they give is that this creature was about 2 to 4 feet tall. It had an oversized head and a gray body, large pointed ears, claw-like hands, spindly small legs, and large eyes that glowed yellow. Now, what does that sound like to you?
I'm having a hard time picturing that thing, honestly. It sounds not pleasant to look at, though.
Lucky for you, this is one of the non-context photos that I sent you. Artist rendering of this creature.
Yes. Okay. I do remember that one.
So, an artist took all the descriptions and tried to make a picture out of it. So, this is what they see coming at them.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm looking at the picture now. And again, a great time to shout out that we have the Audio Archive Instagram to look at these photos just kind of for context.
Yeah. Any pictures I'm referencing today.
You can see what this guy looks like. And honestly, if you told me to draw a goblin, that's probably not what I'm drawing. But, you know, he looks like something otherworldly, to say the least.
Kind of alien-ish.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
This is a good time to kind of pivot back to modern days.
Okay.
I'll say, Kelly, Kentucky, to this day, on August 21st, 22nd, they have the Kelly Green Man Festival because of this event.
Oh, so it stuck around this
yeah, so story. Every year they have a festival celebrating the Kelly Green Men. And in 2017, it actually landed on the exact same day that the eclipse happened, and Kelly, Kentucky was in the zone of totality.
This has to be, like, my brother went to the lake house for the eclipse because it was totality. I bet this is pretty close to...
Meemaw seeing goblins.
I just got to look this up now just to see. All right, what's the name of this place? Hopkinsville?
Yeah, Hopkinsville, Kentucky. What's the name of the place?
Paducah. No freaking way.
How close are we?
They're an hour apart.
Not bad.
Yeah, as we were saying these names, like, man, these sound really familiar. So I've driven probably through or by Hopkinsville to get to my family lake house for the 4th of July.
Well, next time I'm hiding in the trunk and then I'm yeah. stealing a car and going
hey,
to
Dad, we got pulled over. David needs to go investigate some goblins real quick.
I gotta go find these guys. So that's worth noting, is in the eclipse totality zone.
Yeah.
On the anniversary of the event happening.
So they probably went all out for that one.
Yeah, I heard in one of the podcasts I listened to researching this that during the 2017 Kelly Green Man Festival that occurred during this eclipse, there was a rally to give away like a 2007 Mitsubishi Eclipse. So the dogs are barking. They see these creatures. They get about 20 feet away. Now, what do you think two Kentucky boys are going to do with a strange creature approaching their home?
I'm guessing they're going to grab the shotgun, the rifle, you know, any other thing that can fire and just take some pot shots at this thing.
You are dead on. They grab 22 rifle,
yep,
12 gauge shotgun, and a 20 gauge shotgun. So they see it 20 feet away. They take a shot at it.
Yeah, because why not?
Like, this is some strange thing. It's approaching the house.
Sure, there's 11 people that live here. Let's just start firing erratically at this thing.
Yeah. So they take a shot at it. And 20 feet, that's not very far.
Actually, that's a good... That thing's close when they're...
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
So after they shoot at it, it's very dark this night.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't really see what happened after they shot it.
Mm-hmm.
I looked up the moon phases for Hopkinsville, Kentucky in 1955.
Yeah.
And there had been a new moon, so that means no moon in the sky, on August 18th. So the night of the 21st.
It's real dark.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We're 3 days into a waxing crescent.
So, I do love a good waxing crescent.
I love it. Only thing better is a gibbous.
I like it better when they're waning, honestly, but that's for another episode. Wait, what'd you... Oh, gibbous? A waxing gibbous? What did you say? Am I just hearing what I want to hear now?
No, that's what it's called.
Is that what's a waxing gibbous?
You have new moon.
Yeah.
And then between new moon and half,
yeah,
it's a crescent.
Yeah.
And then from half to full, it's a gibbous.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Anyway, moving along.
Okay. So it was a really dark night. There's just maybe a sliver of moon in the sky, but not bright at all.
Yeah.
So even though it was only 20 feet away, they took a shot. They're like, we're not sure what happened. Let's go take a look. So they start leaving the house, and just outside of the front door, it's just a small little overhang, so you could literally just stand just outside the door and not get rained on. And that's okay. About it.
Yeah.
As Billy Ray is starting to get out from under this overhang, he said a clawed hand reached down and grabbed his hair.
Just his hair.
Grabs his hair. And at that moment, Lucky jumps out, past the overhang, turns around and shoots it.
Okay.
They notice another one on the very top of the roof. Take a shot at that one.
Oh, so there's more than one of these.
So that's an interesting piece of information because they only see one at a time.
Okay.
So through this whole thing, if you look this up in some sensationalized piece of media, you're going to see they got bombarded by 15 to 20 creatures and they were like at war with them.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual factual accounts are that they only saw one at a time, and there was one instance when someone saw two at the same time.
So it could be a trick it plays or something, too.
Something.
Something along those lines. Okay.
So they shoot the one in the yard. They're going out to see if it's still there, what's going on. They see the one that grabs the hare, he shoots that. It takes off. Then one climbs up over the roof. They mm-hmm. shoot that one. They turn around, and they notice that one's on a tree branch. And so they shoot at that one.
This just sounds like pandemonium for however long
these creatures are just coming from all angles. And Lucky and Billy Ray, they're taking shots at each one that they see.
Yeah.
So eventually, after they shoot that one on the tree branch, they retreat back inside. They see an opening. Let's get back inside. Let's try and regroup, figure out what in the world is going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, they go to look out the windows, and they notice there's one at the window.
Okay.
So they shoot it point blank in the face.
Yeah.
Now, through all of this, there's no bodies, there's no blood.
That's what's gonna, like, for how many shots they're firing, like, it doesn't sound like it's very effective. They can't tell if it's one or 50 of these things. Like, it's either warping around or messing with them, but it doesn't sound like their weaponry is very effective here.
Yeah. These guns are not doing any damage to these beings. They reported later when they got to the police, they had shot over the course of the night, 4 boxes of ammunition.
Yeah.
And so a standard box of shotgun shells would be about 25 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And a standard box of 22 ammo would be 50 rounds.
So hundreds of...
So they shot somewhere between 100 and 200 shotgun shells, rounds of 22 at these creatures. So they were shooting quite a bit.
Do you have any research on how close their neighbors were? In my head, I'm like, okay, so 3 acres of farmland, these bullets are going to be like going to their neighbors' homes.
So I don't think their neighbors were close enough to get hit by bullets.
Yeah.
We'll circle back to this later, but the police did interview some of their neighbors, and one of the neighbors said he heard maybe 4 rounds
mm-hmm.
get fired, and he just chalked it up to they were setting off firecrackers or something like that.
Being in areas like that, you kind of expect to hear people hunting or firing weapons in their backyard. You know, it's not too out of place, just maybe not hundreds of them, but I guess you might be like, well, you know, Billy Ray's just having a time.
So the one neighbor said that. They did interview a second neighbor, and he said it sounded like there was a war happening. So, yeah, you're getting that piece of it, too.
Yeah.
So they're shooting at these things. This lasts a few hours. And they noticed that when they would shoot these creatures, their immediate reaction was they would do a backflip and then float away.
Like we said, pizzazz, man. They've got it.
Their immediate reaction is gymnastics.
Yeah, I'm here for it.
Let's do a backflip, then we'll leave the area.
Why just get shot when you can, you know, throw a little spice on it?
Exactly. So the people at the farmhouse, they said it felt like they would shoot one, and it would do a backflip and run away, and then it would come back somewhere else.
Yeah.
So they were under the assumption there was not a whole lot of them, but that they would just keep coming back.
So I guess where I get a little lost as far as this creature, what exactly constitutes a goblin? Is it appearance? Are they just mischievous and like to do these weird tricks to people? Like, what is there a certain thing that just makes you a goblin?
I think you're not wrong in asking. I think that goblin in this context is incorrect.
Okay.
I think it just sort of got that moniker. I don't know where the title of this event being the Kelly Hopkinsville Goblins mm-hmm. came from, but this is more looked at as a UFO extraterrestrial
situation.
And this is a good time to bring up something called the Hynek scale.
Okay.
You've never heard those words before, but you have heard of the Hynek scale in a way.
Okay.
So the Hynek scale is a scale that tries to categorize extraterrestrial encounters.
In what way?
So it has six different categories, and I'll just run through them real quick.
Yeah, give me the rundown.
The first one is nocturnal lights. So you see lights at night.
Yep, simple enough.
Simple. Second category, daylight discs. So you see a classic flying saucer during the day.
Okay.
Third category is a radar visual. So this is, you're not seeing it with your eyes. It's showing up on equipment.
So you're flying a plane, see a blip on your radar.
Yeah.
Nothing there. Air
traffic controller sees something that's not, they don't see with their eyes or maybe isn't there or isn't registering as a aircraft in the area.
Okay. And what's number four?
Number four is close encounters of the first kind. This is a visual sighting less than 300 feet away of a UFO.
I like that they have a distance like that. Like, why not 400 feet or 300
feet? It's way too far.
Yeah.
300 feet. And then fifth is close encounters of the second kind. And this is a UFO event that also has physical or electronic effects. So this would be you see a UFO and you start getting sick to your stomach.
Okay.
Or you see a UFO and the radio in your car starts going haywire. And then the last one, the reason you and most people out there have heard of the Hynek scale, close encounters of the third kind.
Spielberg film, I think.
I think so, yeah. This is you see occupants of the UFO.
Do you have to interact with them or just like the visual components enough to get you there?
The visual components enough to get you to close encounters of the third kind. It could even be seeing a being standing in the window of the UFO.
Okay.
So it's not even necessarily the being coming out of the UFO and you witnessing it. It could be at a distance.
Okay. What's the reason for that scale? Just to categorize?
Yeah, to categorize. The Hynek scale is named after J. Allen Hynek.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked on Project Blue Book for the government, which I will cover more in depth in the theories portion of this.
Okay, so we won't give away too much.
Yeah, and so it all comes about with that.
Okay.
So this family, they're terrified. They're shooting at these creatures. Nothing's happening. Mm-hmm. They keep coming back. They see an opening. And around 11 p.m., the family sprints out of the house, gets in their cars, and they speed down to Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And they go into the police station. The police note that they come in really worked up. There's a lot of anxiety, a lot of panic. One of the police officers that was involved, I guess, had some history of being an EMS worker. And so he said that he attempted to observe Billy Ray's pulse mm-hmm. by watching one of the veins in his neck.
Very scientific.
Extremely process. Scientific. Yeah. And he estimated Billy Ray's pulse to be 140.
I like picturing him just standing there going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
This guy's worked up. Yeah. So even if, you know, that's not incredibly an accurate way of assessing pulse, but if you're getting something like 140, the guy's pulse is probably pretty elevated. So this group is, they're scared.
Yeah.
The police decide, all right, these people are coming in. They're telling us they've been shooting all over the place at their property. Even if there's nothing, we should go investigate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a slow night in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, because eventually what ended up at the farmhouse were four city police officers, five state troopers, three deputy sheriffs, and four MPs from Fort Campbell.
Was anybody left?
Everybody, this radio call went out. Hey, we got some shooting going on in Kelly. And everybody's like, well, let's go check this out.
They chartered a bus to get the whole crew over there.
Yeah, so everybody shows up at the house. The police, they look all over. They are able to see mm-hmm. the window's been shot out. There's bullet holes on the roof. There's bullet holes on the tree branches. They're able to see there was a lot of gunfire here. But other than that, they don't really see a whole lot.
Did this family have any prior history with the police station and like showing up to report things?
No.
Okay. So this was like their first.
This was the first.
It wasn't like, oh, here come the crazies again. There's a reason to go out there and look at this. It's not. It can't be written off. Yeah.
No. The police took this very seriously. They weren't a group of people known to just mess with the police. So I've read varying reports, but some places say that the police did find a green glow coming from different places. One place I saw this said that part of the fence where they had seen one of the creatures was glowing green. Another said that the police observed a green glow past the tree line in the direction that this ship would have landed. But they didn't really, they just didn't take it any further. And they were like, yeah, that's kind of odd.
Yeah.
And so they see all this, they inspect the house the whole time. You should also know that the whole family, all 11 people, they stayed in the cars while the police were investigating.
So they were terrified. They're just like,
they were scared enough that they did not get out of the cars until the police came back and were like, we didn't find anything. There's nothing strange that we can tell. We saw where you guys were shooting at stuff. But ultimately, they say there's nothing we can determine.
Yeah. There's some green glowing areas. What do you want us to do?
There's nothing we can do about that.
Yeah.
And so the police leave around 2 a.m. And then shortly after that, the family gets out of the cars. They go back in the house. And they're like, all right, I know this isn't going to work, but let's try to get some sleep here. And shortly after laying down, Glennie Langford, she rolls over and she sees a creature, the same kind of creature, standing directly in her bedroom window on the outside of the house.
Yeah.
And then the fight continues. She screams or yells or whatever. And Lucky and Billy Ray, they come in. I'm guessing they shoot at it through the window.
Of course they shoot at it.
And at this point, the whole family decides, okay, we're not sleeping tonight.
Yeah.
So they turn off all the lights and they huddle basically just inside of the front door. They got their weapons loaded. They're ready. As far as I can tell, they just left the door open so that they would be able to shoot at anything that comes. About 20 minutes later, one approaches the door. This is the first time that one of the other women at the house sees one of these creatures. Her description of it was that it looked like, quote, a 5-gallon gasoline can with a head on top made of shimmering bright metal. So again, they shoot at it. It does its backflip, takes off, and they continue to fight these things off until sunrise, which was at 6:13 a.m.
So did any of them ever hurt or harm anyone, or do they kind of just appear and approach? Were they threatening, or just, it almost sounds like they're just like messing with these people.
They were not threatening, and Glennie Langford actually was quoted later in saying she didn't feel particularly threatened by them beyond these weird things approaching your house. That's gonna,
yeah, they're crossing your threshold for sure. But it didn't sound like anybody got, I mean, apart from getting your hair grabbed, you know, there's worse things you could do.
Yeah. And so there's no real acts of violence that happens to the family.
Okay.
So they keep going and they fight until 6 a.m. or so. Sun comes up and evidently, these creatures stop approaching the house. They leave the family alone, and they never come back. So that's the whole event.
So a single night event.
A single
night.
That's
a long night, though.
That is a very long night.
That's from 7 p.m. to about 6 next morning. So, you know, like 11 hours of, well, I guess they also went to the police station, but still, that's a long night.
Yeah. And so next morning, police come back. And I already mentioned this. They interviewed a couple neighbors. One said he heard just a few shots. The other sounded like a whole war was going on.
Yeah.
The other thing the police note when they come back in conjunction with their investigation in the middle of the night is that they determine there was no drinking involved. They
that
said
was in the back of my mind the entire time is what kind of crazy moonshine has been going down. But so none of that.
They found 2 or 3 empty beer cans at the house, but that was about it. There was no evidence that there was any heavy drinking going on. And Glennie Langford, the head of the house, was actually very, very against anybody drinking spirits.
Hmm.
So anything stronger than a beer, she forbade in her house. You weren't allowed to have it. And the police agreed with that.
Yeah, I was thinking, so 1955, in my head, I was like, I wonder if they would do like a toxicology report. They didn't seem to have any reason to take a blood sample from anybody to test for alcohol, whatever. So it sounds like a pretty buttoned up family. I mean, a couple beers isn't enough to do much.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know about your experiences, but even a lot of beers isn't going to have me seeing
little silver men approaching my home for 11
with their
hours.
Arms up and doing backflips.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Just not going to.
That's usually just my nephew.
All right, should we get into some thoughts on what may have happened here?
Yeah, I feel like we've covered it pretty well here, so why don't you give me a few theories that we've got?
Yeah, so I've got 5-6 theories or explanations for what's going on here.
Okay.
The first one that a lot of people go to, one you actually referenced thinking about the whole time I was telling the story, that these were just drunk hillbillies.
Yeah, whole time I was like, bad moonshine, somebody made it in their bathtub wrong, and then you have already discredited that one.
That's
out.
That's the first thing people go to when they hear this story, is these people got drunk and they just started shooting at things.
Yeah.
As I've talked about, wasn't hardly any alcohol in the house. Few beer cans, that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a detractor to that theory is they went to the police. If I'm this family and I'm drunkenly shooting stuff up at the house, knowing full well that my neighbors aren't going to, they're just going to expect it or not really do anything about it, I'm not going to then go to the police and be like, hey, I was shooting at things. Come investigate and see how drunk I am.
Yeah. And this is 1955. So, like, you know, there's pretty well established laws on, you know, drinking and driving and,
yeah, I'm,
you know,
sure they weren't nearly as enforced back then, but yeah, it doesn't, logically, it doesn't make sense. I guess they could have been doing really illogical things if they were super drunk, but again,
just doesn't add up.
It just doesn't add up for me. The second theory is some sort of mass hysteria or pseudoscience.
Mm-hmm.
If you open Wikipedia, this event has a Wikipedia page, and you scroll down to explanations, the very first thing you're going to read, and I'm going to read this directly from Wikipedia.
Yeah, I'm here.
Psychologists Rodney Schmaltz and Scott Lilienfeld cite the alleged incident as an example of pseudoscience and an extraordinary claim to help students develop critical thinking skills.
Okay, what does that mean?
So they're basically saying this whole thing was made up. And it couldn't have happened. And the claims that they're making, there's no way it was aliens. There's no way it was a cryptid or anything. They're essentially writing all of this off as these people being crazy.
So they intentionally made it up, or they were in a state of psychosis, or...
So I think I can give you a little more context.
Okay.
Because if you, on that Wikipedia page, if you go to the reference for that paragraph,
yeah,
it brings you to an article written by Schmaltz and Lilienfeld,
okay,
titled Hauntings, Homeopathy, and the Hopkinsville Goblins, Using Pseudoscience to Teach Scientific Thinking. It's a long article,
yeah,
but I'll read the relevant portion.
Okay.
And this is directly from the paper, word for word. Given the details and vivid eyewitness accounts, students may assume the case offers compelling evidence of alien visitation. Instructors should encourage students to consider what additional evidence would be required to accept this extraordinary claim and to lay out plausible alternative explanations for the events. The Hopkinsville entities have a decidedly earthly explanation. The quote-unquote aliens were in fact great horned owls, and the eyewitnesses were probably intoxicated during the alien attack. Students usually find the true story of the events amusing, and this example can lead naturally into a discussion on Area 51, the Greys, or otherworldly interests. So they're essentially saying it was owls and everybody was drunk. So it couldn't
Which is interesting because they found so little alcohol at the house. So how do the two theories kind of connect or, you know, support, counter each other?
So let's go deeper.
Yeah, let's dig.
If you click on the reference that this paper uses to say it was great horned owls and the eyewitnesses were intoxicated, it takes you to the Davis and Bloker book, Close Encounters at Kelly and Others of 1955.
Okay.
This book is a recounting of the events, as I have told you, of this occurrence.
Hmm.
There is no reference in that book to owls. There is active reference in that book to intoxication not being possible. So the reference that this paper is using to say this is pseudoscience and an extraordinary claim that could not have happened is saying, no, it could have happened.
As it a supernatural...
As a supernatural alien encounter, it's simply recounting the facts that the family relayed about the event.
And this is a book written by somebody who, I assume, investigated the event, but they are not... This is not from a scientific paper. This is from a book about the event.
Yeah. This is a nonfiction book that Davis and Blocher wrote about the event.
What's their background? They're not doctors or...
No, they're just investigators that looked into this. Okay. So they decided to write a book about encounters in 1955, and the big one is Kelly, because the title of the book is Close Encounters at Kelly. That book does not reference great horned owls, and that book says intoxication is off the table. So let me read you the quote from the scientific article.
Yeah.
Once again, it says, the Hopkinsville entities have a decidedly earthly explanation. The aliens were, in fact, great horned owls, and the eyewitnesses were probably intoxicated during the alien attack. Reference Davis and Blocher, 1978. So, Schmaltz and Lilienfeld, who wrote this scientific paper, there's no way they actually read the reference that they put into their paper, because now it actively refutes what they put into their scientific paper. And somehow they made it to top spot on explanations on Wikipedia with this.
Hmm. That's a good catch.
That theory, the Schmaltz and Lilienfeld basically saying this is an extraordinary claim, it couldn't have happened, I think is going way too far into the skeptic side of things. I don't think it's healthy to believe every single extraordinary story that you hear as truth. And I also don't think it's healthy to write off every single thing you hear as there's no way that could have happened. We can explain everything away.
Don't close your mind off to
possibility. The truth is somewhere in the middle
or on the edge too, because there's the odd one where it is, you know, the outlier that you maybe would have discounted at first.
Absolutely. So this theory that it was just an extraordinary claim, it's more feels like Schmaltz and Lilienfeld are just poking fun at this event rather than trying to actually figure out what happened with this event.
So despite being a scientific paper, almost a little tongue-in-cheek perhaps of just like, this is so stupid.
It feels that way. Like, we're scientists. Of course, this didn't happen. And they didn't really dig into it because clearly they didn't even read the reference that they used in their own paper. So that's that theory. The next one is that it was a hoax. And this comes from Project Blue Book, which we talked about earlier with J. Allen Hynek. So Project Blue Book, a little bit about it, it was a government program. It ran from March of 1952 to December of 1969.
And this is where we were talking about the Hynek.
The Hynek scale
comes from this.
And Project Blue Book, so it had a 17-year run. It was a government investigation into UFOs. And so they were trying to determine if UFOs were a threat to national security or not. So not dissimilar to what's going on now with all the UAP talk in Congress and all that. I don't know if you keep up with that at all, but...
UAP I've heard of here and there in passing, but it seems to kind of be the modern governmental approach to UFO sightings and things like that. But it seems a little more open than it used to be. Is that a fair way to put it? Publicly, anyway?
They've had two, the past two summers, they've had a public congressional hearing on UAPs with the witnesses testifying to some wild stuff.
How does a UAP compare to a UFO?
It's same thing, different name.
Okay, what is
unidentified flying object and unidentified aerial phenomenon?
Okay,
so it's the exact same thing.
Maybe not an object, but stuff
just
in the air.
Decided to change the letters for some reason to confuse everyone.
Right.
So Project Blue Book, this was their investigation into UFOs in the 50s and 60s. During that 17-year run, they investigated 12,618 UFO reports.
Okay.
Of those 12,618, 701 remained unexplained.
Okay.
So not a whole lot. And this, the hoax theory comes from Project Blue Book, because now you can go back and you can look at all these investigations and what the result was. You can't get all the paperwork involved with it, but you can go to Project Blue Book files and look up Kelly Hopkinsville encounter, mm-hmm. and then it just says hoax. And so the federal government, in the course of doing Project Blue Book, investigated this theory and determined it was a hoax. And there's no other information about why or how.
So it doesn't give background, just categorizes
yeah,
it.
Yeah, just the category was that it was a hoax. So it was not one of the 701, let's say, substantiated claims of we couldn't explain this.
This Project Blue Book, I imagine at the time wasn't public?
It was not, no.
So has this become public now, or was that like a leak? Like, how did Project Blue Book come to be known to like you and me?
I think the people that are involved in the UFO community, mm-hmm. they have, I'm sure some of them have inside sources, and so they're aware of all of these things happening, and they probably filed a Freedom of Information Act for all these files. Maybe they aged out. I think there's like a certain amount of time that after which government files become public.
And so they're just declassified.
Yeah, so they became declassified, and you can look up from 1952 to 1969 kind of any UFO encounter in Project Blue Book and see which category they gave it.
Because what I was going to say is, I mean, the government might have an interest in saying it's a hoax so that people don't look into it. But if this was something that was actually internal and then
became public
is one thing. But even still, you know, depending on how secret something is, they may still have a reason to bury something.
Just thinking through this theory, because Project Blue Book doesn't give any background or anything. Mm-hmm. If this was a hoax, thinking about what would be needed for that. Because I don't think this family would hoax seeing all these creatures and destroying windows and other parts of the farmhouse to shoot at them just so they had a good story to tell.
Yeah.
There were reports that after this story got out, became national news at one point, a lot of people started coming by the farmhouse because they wanted to see it, see what where it happened, and do their own investigation, that the family, after a little while, did start charging people money to come to the farmhouse to see the area and everything. I mean, if I had hundreds of people showing up every day to my house, I probably would do the same thing. And so that's kind of the only hoax angle I can see that makes any sense.
Does Project Blue Book break down its categorizations? Like, hoax means...
No.
It checks these boxes. So it's just like the classification is what we know a hoax to be.
Yeah. Classification, hoax, on to the next thing. So,
and to your point, for where they are, they're so remote. It'd be odd for my dad to put us all in the car and say, we're going to go to Kelly, Kentucky, Hopkinsville, Kentucky, to go to this house and just see like a blown out window. You know, like there isn't much going on out there to like have the reason be, we're trying to bring in all these people. I mean, but maybe it's a big enough community that follows this stuff. Like, it would work. I don't know. It seems like a reach.
You'd think town is 16,000, 9 miles away. You're going to have some people coming by looking, but it doesn't... You're right. It doesn't feel like something you could bank on.
But to that point, though, they do now have this whole festival in this town.
Yeah.
So maybe I don't know what
I'm talking
about.
If it was a hoax, it worked.
Yeah.
Because people are talking about it to this day. But I wouldn't think that this family would be sitting there that night thinking through, like, well, let's sprint to the police and tell them that we've been shooting at these little creatures that are coming up to the windows and everything, et cetera, et cetera. Thinking, you know what? 70 years from now, two guys are going to be sitting in a living room recording a podcast episode about this. Like, people are going to talk about this for decades.
Yeah.
The hoax angle, I don't think makes much sense.
Honestly, I could see some people just sitting around having a few drinks, being bored in the boonies and be like, you know what? Let's just like do this stupid thing. Like, I've been with people doing similar dumb things. Not to that extent. And I don't think I would go to the police. about it.
Yeah, getting the police involved is kind of is a step too far for me.
Okay, so hoax, I feel like we kind of know where we stand, but we'll keep it on the list. What else do we have?
The next one is an owl. And so this was referenced in that article that I did not enjoy.
Yeah.
Great horned owls.
And you sent me a picture of this. Again, we'll share that as well. Yeah. And that was the paper you mentioned that they said that they were just firing at owls all
night. The decidedly earthly explanation. It was great horned owls. So did a little digging on great horned owls.
Yeah.
Physical description. They're about 22 inches tall. So they're on the low end. They're 2 to 4 feet tall.
Okay.
A 4 foot wingspan. And they only weighed about 3 pounds. So owls move pretty quick. Some behavioral information about great horned owls. They actually tend to be pretty sedentary. They're not overly aggressive, except for in one particular case, which we'll get to in just a second. They're not migratory. They stay in the same place all year long, their whole lives if they can. The one piece of information that maybe could point to this being great horned owls is that they're extremely territorial. Their territory ranges anywhere from 0.8 to 6.2 square miles.
Okay.
So it could be a pretty small area. Less than a square mile would be an owl's territory.
Yeah.
Given that they're so territorial, you wouldn't think that you could have a very large population of these owls. And so there's a lot of what they call floaters, which are owls that don't have their own territory. So they have to float between other owls' territory. And essentially, they're always fighting for their life.
So they just get chased out.
They get chased out of this one. They go in another one, get chased out of that one. They're kind of...
Sounds like it sucks.
Yeah. It's not a fun way to go.
Yeah.
Great horned owls, as you probably know, owls are nocturnal. They're hunting usually is about 8:30 p.m. to midnight.
Okay.
And then they have a little siesta. And then they pick back up 4:30 a.m. till whenever sun rises.
So kind of
lines up.
Yeah, with the timeline.
The front end definitely lines up. Back end.
Well, they went to the police station, came back. They circled up. She saw the one in the window. So, you know, I feel like the timeline at least kind of works. Yeah,
so that could account for the lull when they were able to go to the police come out, investigate, and leave again. They fly up to 40 miles an hour, so they're pretty quick. And most of the time, and I don't think this is just great horned owls, but owls in general, will perch somewhere and observe prey and then swoop down and grab it. They don't often hunt on the wing. I'm using quote fingers when I say that. Hunt on the wing.
In case you can't hear them at home.
When you see like a hawk or something circling and just kind of floating up in the sky. Looking for rodents or prey or something to then go down and get. Owls do that, but they don't do that a whole lot. Most of the time they're going to be perched somewhere and go down and grab it. When they hunt on the wing, though, I said they can fly up to 40 miles an hour. When they are hunting on the wing, they're flying way slower than that.
Okay.
They're not, because they're not actively going after
prey. They're
just
kind of surveying the land and just waiting for prey.
Trying to find something. Just behaviorally, they're really, really, really extremely territorial with themselves. They're going to fight out another great horned owl out of their territory, but they usually aren't going to mess with other large predators. So they're not going to swoop down and like attack a bear that's in their territory or something.
Yeah, and I feel like it's a bit of a reach to assume it would attack this family over territory, because this house sounds like it's been there for a bit.
It would definitely be a change in behavior, because this family would have been able to say, oh, it's that owl at it again.
Yeah.
Like, it's upset that we're walking around in the yard. It swooped down at me. Regardless of the fact that they usually won't attack a human, unless the human is like trying to get at their nest or doing something else that's actively against the owl. Mm-hmm. They're not just going to start attacking a human.
But I looked at the photo. It does have kind of like the trademark eyes that you mentioned. You know, speed to bounce around from location to location. So, I mean, there's at least some overlap timeline-wise and appearance-wise. There's, you know, something there.
There's a lot of similarities. The biggest attractor for me on this theory is that the family would have seen an owl before.
Yeah.
Hey, Billy Ray isn't going to have an owl 20 feet from him and be like, that's a gasoline can that's shimmering metal. Right. They would have known what an owl looks like.
Yeah, they live in a farmhouse. Owls are kind of commonplace in such a location, I would
you
assume.
Would imagine,
yeah,
that they had seen an owl before, or at least heard of owls.
Yeah, at least enough not to fire 200 rounds at it over exactly. the course of 11 hours.
Also, if it was an owl, and they fired 200 shots at an owl or a pair of owls, they missed every single shot because there was no dead owl anywhere.
Yeah.
So they're also really bad shots, including at point blank range through a window.
Yeah.
Twice. So it starts to fall apart a little bit that it was an owl.
I agree. Okay, so anything else we need to know about kind of the owl theory, or should we move on to the next one?
That's the owl theory. And then the last theories, I always like to end with, it was what they said it was.
Yeah.
And so the last theory is that this was aliens. Some extraterrestrial ship seemingly broke down behind their house, and these creatures, I would guess, based on reading about this story, came to the house for help or to try and find something that they needed to get their ship working again, and they ended up getting shot at.
Instead, they come across Billy Ray and Lucky.
Billy Ray and Lucky.
Armed to the teeth.
A couple country boys with guns. Yeah. So that theory is, like I said, the aliens, alien ship crash landed. And they started approaching the house. It would account for strange description.
Yeah.
It would account for the weapons being useless. Because if I'm an alien and I can fly through space, I'm not just going up to this house in my birthday suit.
Yeah.
I'm going to have some sort of force field device or something. I'm going to be ready to do some backflips.
Yeah.
So those are the theories. And so having heard all of that for the first time, what's your take? And having visited that area.
Yeah, this is a tough one, though. I mean, what really throws me is, I mean, you know, I'm generally coming from the skeptic side, but I always like to keep an open mind. Anything's possible. But the science paper just kind of pointed to that book without it being even correct. It's just a really interesting curveball. Because I was like, oh, well, there it is. Like, they, you know, said here's what it was or wasn't. But Project Blue Book, I think, is interesting.
Yeah.
That they just outright call it a hoax. I do wish that gave a little more background information of, like, what was their evidence? Did they send someone out there? You know, like, how did they reach that conclusion would be great to see.
Yeah, it would be nice to see the actual case files that they had, because maybe some men in black showed up, did some digging, and found something that only they know.
Yeah. And again, like I said, even with freedom of information, like FOIA. Thank you. FOIA. Even with a FOIA request, you know, I just have a hard time believing the government doesn't have some extra level of security that even we'll never know. I don't care what the request is, where they're like, this is too big to get out.
Oh, yeah.
But again, would this be that story? You know, because everybody's going to draw their own conclusions anyway.
Yeah.
But my first thought was just like, man, they got to be on something. But like you said, there's two beer cans there, but like, how much can we trust wherever that information comes from? But going to the police, that's a little weird if you're blasted. So I don't know, man. I think people do weird, crazy stuff when they're just bored and with a circle of friends. And I lean towards, you know, they're just a kind of an eccentric family. I lean towards hoax of some kind. Maybe they got carried away with it. Maybe they actually did have some alcohol around and, you know, I don't know, disposed of it. The owls, I think we can toss in my mind. So I'm kind of split between it just being bored out in the middle of nowhere. Let's drum up some fun. Maybe got too carried away with it. Or, hey, we need some cash. What's a kind of a creative way to like make that happen for the family?
Okay.
And you said there were carnival workers also, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're an eccentric bunch from the sound of it. That's not the craziest thing to think they might come up with.
Okay. I like that theory.
Yeah. How about you?
This is, of all of the paranormal stories we've talked about, this is one that I'm closest to going the paranormal conclusion on.
Okay.
This is the one that I'm like, all the other explanations just don't feel right for me. And maybe something odd did happen at this farmhouse in Kelly, Kentucky in 1955. And these people saw something that either they shouldn't have seen, were never meant to see, but they did. And they started shooting at it. I think the state of panic and anxiety they were in when they went to the police station says a lot, because it'd be hard to fake a vein in your neck pulsating wildly.
Yeah.
And so this is the one that I'm closest to. Maybe these were some sort of extraterrestrial being of some sort.
Okay.
That showed up at this farmhouse looking for help. I wish somebody had gone back into the woods to see if there was a ship that landed back there or something like that. This is one where I really, really wish I had a time machine. Mm-hmm. This would be like top 10. I'm going back to Kelly, Kentucky, 1955, and I'm going to see what's going on there.
This is the first one you seem to have been like, yeah, this could be the paranormal one. And also is the one that I had the hardest time kind of, you know, picking the doubter's side, if you will. You know, so I can't outright deny that, you know.
Yeah,
that,
it is, hey, it is a wild story.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's going to be a wild explanation, but well, maybe, in a few years, we'll have to attend the Kelly Green Man Festival.
With all the answers that we're looking for.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that's all we can do on this one. But we'd love to know your guys' leading theory. Again, there'll be some information on our Instagram account, just some photos and stuff, so you can kind of see what we're talking about visually.
That's Oddity Archive Podcast.
Sorry, Oddity Archive Podcast on Instagram. And then if you want to shoot us an email, it's oddityarchivepodcast@gmail.com. Email those theories or anything you want us to look into, anything spooky that's happened to you.
Yeah, I'd love to hear some listener stories.
Yeah, would be great.
Love to dig into some of those, see if maybe we could use one of those on here.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that does it for us on the Hopkinsville Goblins. We'll see you guys on the next one.
Until next time. I am David Stuhldreher, creator and host. The show is edited by my co-host, Evan Miller. All original music created by Sean Bullock. You can follow him at Sean Bullock Video on Instagram. All original artwork done by Tannis. Follow her at Tannis Tattoos on Instagram as well. Thank you for listening.